Welcome to episode 60 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast and stage 4 of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Well, it's wet, rainy, and cold here at stage 4 of the Amgen Tour of California, but the show is jam-packed. Starting with an interview this morning I had with race announcer Jeff Roque. Then I caught up with one of the best cycling dads I've ever talked to. Following that, I'll have a recap of stage 4 of today's Amgen Tour, and then you'll hear from the voice of Radio Tour herself, Lauren Rhodes. Finally, I caught up with Mark Olson this evening. He's the team manager of Team Priority Health. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. And here's another reason to shop at Cambria. Use the promo code found in tonight's show notes at www.thefredcast.com for 20% off your entire order at Cambria Bike. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Well, greetings from Solvang, California, where it's Thursday night and we're getting ready for tomorrow's time trial, which should be absolutely critical in determining who will be the final wearer of the golden jersey in the 2007 Amgen Tour of California when we roll into Long Beach, California on Sunday. When we woke up this morning in Monterey, California, it was a miserable day. I heard the rain all night. It was coming down very hard, and it was no different this morning. Luckily, by the time the start of the race occurred at 10 o'clock this morning, the skies had cleared at least partially, the sun was out, and the racers got off to a start under dry skies but wet streets. Once the racers were headed on their way down Highway 1 in the beautiful coast near the Monterey Peninsula and Big Sur, I had a chance to catch up with Jeff Roque, the voice of the Amgen Tour of California for 2007, and ask him about what his reactions are to this year's race.
It's very exciting. I've done this a long time, over 25 years. The buzz at the communities of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California is unlike anything I've ever seen or experienced before. I got to announce the Olympic Games. Believe me, that is such a structured event. It borders on not being fun. But I tell you, this is fun. I love an audience where we hear the shrill screams of the little ones, the children. This is a big deal for them, and I'm so happy to see them out at the fences here in Seaside, California. A marvelous outpouring from Seaside, who gets this thing. I have no idea what Monterey was thinking, why they didn't want to have it back this year, but Seaside has done a magnificent job for your stage start. And it's the whole thing is growing as we move from north to Southern California. It just seems to get bigger and bigger. Today was a very exciting start. I'm just getting goose flesh just thinking about it, really. I mean, it's marvelous. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's enthusiastic. The care that goes into this, and, you know, the avoidance of mistakes, it's beyond comparison. It's a great event, and Seaside should be very proud that they're involved with it.
What do you think about how cycling is growing as a spectator sport here in the United States?
Well, that's the big one, because there was so much talk about, well, Lance is retired now, so it's just going to really be tough to get people out to the races. Absolutely not true. I mean, we had 2006 with the Amgen Tour in its first year, in 2007, both post-Lance years, and they're huge. So what I'm seeing is, we look at Amgen and say thank you very much for the generous title sponsorship for this last year, this year, and I understand next year with the first right of refusal for the years after that. I say AEG is the best steward of a sporting event in the world. I mean, they know what they're about. They have put their eggs in the baskets of emerging sports. Cycling is one. And they have pledged that their involvement will run at least 5 years. And so I just see this growing and growing and growing. There's no reason for the crowds to get smaller. The caliber of the race has just gotten better. We have the maximum number of Pro Tour teams. We have world champions here. I mean, everybody who's anybody in cycling is racing at the Amgen Tour of California. That's it.
So now on that note, What do you think the chances are? And Pat McQuaid's going to be here today. What do you think the chances are we might become a Pro Tour event at some point?
Very good chance. That's going to be the first step, if you will, that this would become a Pro Tour event. The logistics of doing that, I don't understand, you know, all the politics, but then there's a whole bunch of teams that have to be here, and they would have to be here, and that would be at the expense of some regional and pro-continental teams. So it could be a mixed blessing. I just don't know. I mean, I don't have my hands around it yet. What I'm going to say, though, is this. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this event doesn't become a Pro Tour event, it doesn't matter. I mean, we have already had 750,000 people. Or by the time we get down to SLO today, I think they're saying that we'll pass the 750,000 mark with three big days to go. We're going to definitely top last year's roadside count of 1.3 million. Absolutely, for sure. So I guess and when I get to see Paolo Bettini, his nickname is the Cricket. They call him Il Grillo. A fabulous racer. The best one-day racer for the last 5 or 6 years. This guy's won the monuments of cycling. The five most significant events of cycling are called the monuments. He's won Milan-San Remo. He's won Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Last year he won the Giro de Lombardia, the one that comes in October. The one that he is really gearing for this year is the Tour of Flanders, and that's why he's here. And he's not here just mincing around in a nice looking jersey. He is the world champion, and he's wearing those colors and riding those colors proud. He's here. He's all business.
He's awesome. I was watching him on one of the big climbs 2 days ago, climbing in the big ring, and gosh, putting me to shame. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. All right, last but not least, do you have a prediction of who's going to be in gold when we're in Long Beach?
Yeah, I'm going with Levi. They hurt yesterday. That Discovery team hurt. It was a miscalculation, we could say. You don't know exactly, but you know, for 17 guys to have slipped away with only Jason McCartney of the Discovery team there, that cost them. They had to burn some matches. Tommy Danielson's not feeling good. Tommy was way, way off the back. I mean, he played his role early and then was gone. So they are down a little bit, but absolutely not out. And Levi, Lance is here. I mean, you talk about the ultimate motivation. If Lance is saying, get up there, you know, they're going to get up there. They will do anything and everything for Levi Leipheimer. I mean, he is a very capable team leader. And just, you know, the confidence of having George Hincapie and Ivan Basso backing you up. I mean, they have no ambition other than Levi winning. And so with that kind of dedication and talent, can't find anybody else I'd rather bet on.
Jeff, thanks so much. We'll see you in San Luis Obispo.
Thank you.
Well, after that interview, I headed in my car. Yes, for the first time this week, I was actually in my own car. I have to say, when I drove myself away from the start line, I was visibly depressed. No longer in the caravan, out there on the road. I couldn't even see the race today because from Monterey, California, from Seaside, California, the racers headed down Highway 1, which if you've looked at the map of California, you may understand that road, there's not a whole lot of crossroads that you can get into, and therefore, once the CHP closed it off, there was no way that the rest of us could get into that portion of the highway. So we had to go around on Highway 101, and along the way, I was listening to Radio Tour and hearing the updates of the race as we went, and it was raining on Highway 101, and I wasn't hearing a lot about rain on the cyclist. Every once in a while, the Radio Tour announcer would mention that they were in rain and mention the various temperatures, but I kept hearing her call for the teams and for the team cars to come up and remove some of the cyclist clothing. So that sounded like good news. And on Highway 101, it was raining, and finally the rain stopped, and out of sheer chance, my satellite radio started playing the Beatles and Here Comes the Sun. And I thought that that was a good omen for the rest of the day. And it sure enough was. By the time I got to San Luis Obispo, it was dry. And I started walking around the Lifestyle Expo that they've set up at each of the venues every single day at the finish line. As I mentioned yesterday, our sponsor, Cambria Bike, has been at the Lifestyle Expo. And I was talking to Steve Fleury from Cambria Bike, and who should walk up but Jim and Yvonne Raisin. And I was so excited to meet them because, as you well know from listening to the Fredcast, their son Saul was involved in a horrific bike crash last year that left him in a coma. And we were all very concerned that Saul wasn't going to make it out of the coma. And then when he did, that perhaps Saul wouldn't walk again. And as you heard yesterday, Saul's been going out and riding the course every day, although he did not ride today because he didn't have to ride in the rain and the wet and the cold the way the Peloton did. Nevertheless,
Meeting Saul's parents was a real thrill for me, and after speaking with them for just a few minutes, I had to get at least one of them on mic, and Jim graciously agreed in what he told me was his first interview. And so here's what I consider to be one of the best cycling dads I've ever talked to, Jim Raisin. Yesterday, I was honored to talk to Saul Raisin, and you know I've been talking about him on the show since his accident. And today, I had the honor to meet his parents, Jim and Yvonne. And we were talking about how Saul was doing, and I was telling him how impressed I was. Give me your impressions of your son and what kind of a young man he is.
Well, Saul's a wonderful person. He loves people. He'll come up to you and hug you, and when he just meets you, he loves people. That's basically boils it down to everything.
Now, of course, he gets that from you guys, of course. And you know, you guys, I talked about you on the show, and you don't even know that. And that's because what you were going through, I think we were all going through at the time, thinking about Saul. Tell me, if you would, just your initial impressions when you heard the news.
Well, when we first heard the news, the doctors didn't think Saul was in that bad of a condition. And we were nervous because he was in ICU and we couldn't speak to him, but yet they did tell us he was okay and stable. But about 24 hours after that is when he had the hematoma form, and he went from good to worse very quickly, in a matter of 30 minutes to an hour. So when Roger Leger called us back and told us we needed to hurry to France, we literally went in shock. I mean, we had nervous shakes, chills. It was just something I wouldn't wish on anyone.
You sat by his bedside and you supported him and brought him all the way back here. Tell me about his rehabilitation when he got back here and how that went.
His rehabilitation started close to 30 days in Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia. When he first arrived, he couldn't lift his head off his pillow. They asked him some of his goals, and that was his number one goal, is to be able to lift his head off the pillow. Well, the nurse, when we came in there, she talked and she said he'll walk out of this place. And we looked at Yvonne and I looked at each other and we just shook our heads and thought the nurse was crazy. Well, about 30 days ago after that, he did walk out, and he's continuing to surprise the doctors and everybody because he's becoming physically strong very quickly, and he's doing very well.
Now, I talked to Saul yesterday, and he said that he went to the training camp, and he said he was one of the strongest riders there. And then he's out here, he's riding every stage. He didn't ride today, and I don't blame him. It was awful weather. What kind of a feeling as a parent does it give you to have looked at where he was then and where he is now?
We can only say we're thankful. When we arrived in France, we were told not to expect him to come out of the coma. If he did, not to expect him to get out of a bed or a wheelchair for life. And less than 12 months from that date, he's riding his bike 6 hours a day. He's doing very well. He still has some working to do, but he's trying very hard, and that makes you proud to see him not give up.
You know, when Lance Armstrong first had his bouts with cancer, he had a team that wasn't very supportive. Saul has had the opposite. Tell me what it means to you to know that Credit Agricole has been so supportive of your son.
Credit Agricole has been wonderful. Knowing what Lance went through, we kind of thought Saul might have the same outcome, but Credit Agricole told us pretty quickly that they were behind Saul, and they still are. They make it clear they want him back. And they are helping him with team camps. They're trying to teach him where he goes wrong in riding, which is not very many places, but they're trying to show him and help him get back. And you can't beat that in a team.
Lastly, he told me yesterday that he told his mom when he was in the hospital, if he ever got out of it, he was going to give back to the people who gave so much to him. Tell me about the ride that's coming up and what you think the goals of that ride are going to be.
Okay, on March the 31st in Dalton, Georgia, Saul has planned a ride to benefit four different charities, and three of them are specifically for brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, and major illness. And saw us hoping to raise lots of funds to give back to those communities and hopefully help other people. And he's also wanting to spread the word that you don't need to give up. No matter how bad the doctors tell you it's going to be, and he said don't believe them. Just keep trying because it does get better.
So we'll, of course, put the link on the website to the ride information. And the lesson from you is don't give up. And I think the other lesson is great parents can make all the difference. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
I was really impressed with Mr. and Mrs. Raisin. And as a dad, a parent myself, I hope that I can be there for my kids as completely and as immediately as they were and have continued to be for Saul. My thanks to them for taking the time out of their busy day today, and my congratulations to them on being such wonderful, supportive parents. It was really my honor to meet them. And now it's time for a recap of today's Stage 4 of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. This was the longest stage in the entire race at 133.7 miles, and it included three King of the Mountains climbs and two sprints. As I mentioned earlier, although it had been raining earlier in the morning, the rain stopped by the time the race started. And although the streets were wet, the racers were mostly dry. It began to rain soon after and continued doing so off and on throughout the first third of today's stage. At one point, I recall race radio saying that they were in heavy downpours. Early in the race, Alejandro Acton of Colavita Sutter Home and Kirk O.B. of HealthNet attacked and broke away from the group. They were soon joined by five other riders, including two Pro Tour riders and local favorite and Cal Poly San Luis Obispo graduate Lucas User of Team Slipstream. The breakaway extended their lead to more than 4 minutes, but despite Users urging, the group just couldn't work together, and they were eventually caught with just a few kilometers to go till the finish. When the racers reached San Luis Obispo, a huge crowd had assembled to watch them make the left-hand turn onto the final stretch, and when they did, it was world champion Paolo Bettini. Remember the one I mentioned earlier who was climbing at the back of the pack just a few days ago in his big ring? Well, Paolo was battling it out with several other riders, including CSC's JJ Hayato, who won Stage 2 in Sacramento just a couple of days ago. In an extremely tight photo finish, it was Bettini with the stage victory, with T-Mobile's Gerald Ciolek in second and JJ Hayato in third. Now, from my angle, my pictures make it seem like Bettini was in second at the line, but after a look at the photo finish picture, which I'll make sure is on today's website, Bettini clearly won, but only by about a tire's width. So at the end of the day, Levi Leipheimer retained a lead of 3 seconds on Jens Voigt, and he stays in the golden jersey. So it looks like the critical stage will indeed be tomorrow's 14.5-mile time trial in Solvang. Now, Solvang is where a lot of the Pro Tour teams, including, guess who, Discovery and CSC, train in the early part of the season. Levi Leipheimer from Discovery is going to start last, with Jens Voigt from CSC starting second to last. There's no doubt that Jens Voigt would love to be able to take that yellow jersey off the back of Levi Leipheimer at the end of tomorrow's stage. I think there's a couple of other riders who are feeling the same way, so there's no doubt that tomorrow's going to be really exciting.
155 has been cut. Rider 155 has been cut. The break has been cut. We're at 63 miles into the stage.
What you're listening to is something called Radio Tour, and it is something that all of the teams listen to throughout a stage of any stage race. The voice of Radio Tour here at the Amgen Tour of California is Lauren Rhodes. Lauren has a lot of experience doing this announcing, and I caught up with her at the end of today's Stage 4 to ask her about her role in the race. Lauren, tell everybody what it is that you do all day long sitting in the back seat of that car.
Well, cramped in the back seat of a sedan, I do the play-by-play of all the goings-on in the race in English and French. But most of my listeners are the teams. The teams need to know what's going on. So it's time splits, who's in the break, what's going on, who's working hard. But then also it's pretty vital when there are needs, when the riders need their teams. We're calling up team cars, sorting through who needs what, flat tires or clothing. Today we had a whole lot of clothing changes and things. So it's calling up and kind of helping navigate which riders need what from their teams.
So sometimes I suppose you feel a bit like an air traffic controller out there.
Absolutely. I've got two radios, two different channels that I'm listening to, one in each ear, and then talking on a third one, and people calling me all day long, so it's a lot of manipulating radios and channels and getting everyone what they need. So
tell me how you got started doing what you're doing.
I started in cycling by chance. I saw Liège-Bastogne-Liège when I was living in Belgium. And when I returned to Colorado, there was an ad on the radio for people who spoke French to work the Coors Classic. So I worked the Coors Classic, the last 3 years of the Coors Classic, and just kind of stayed in cycling. French is the international language of sport in general, and specifically in cycling. So kind of fell into it. I work a lot in operations and sports marketing, and have done radio tour now off and on, and I love it. It's a great view of the bike race.
Tell me what's the most interesting thing you've seen from your vantage point.
We get to see a lot of the teamwork that's going on. A lot of riders who are the schleppers coming back for clothing, and guys today had 4 and 5 jackets stuffed in their jerseys and trying to deliver those back to the car, a lot of that stuff. Or riders that are making a plan. As far as this week, Paolo Bettini, who happened to win the stage today, he has spent a lot of the race in the back of the field out for a joyride. He's out on a training ride. He doesn't seem to need the last wheel in the field. He's just kind of out spinning and joking with another rider from Liquigas. He's like his buddy. So the two of them are always telling jokes. This week, there was a stage where the two of them talked as though they were making a bet and then sprinted to the front of the field. And I don't know which one won the bet, but they came to the back moments later and they were both laughing. And I'm sure one of them owes the other 10 euros.
So you learned your French in Belgium. What were you doing in Belgium?
Yeah, I've actually lived in Europe a bunch of times. I lived in Belgium on an exchange program between high school and college, and then in France a couple times. And then I lived in Switzerland for 3 years, where I worked on the World Cup soccer tournament that was in France. So I've had lots of opportunities in my career to speak French.
Now, I know in some races, not only would you have to do radio tour in English and in French, you'd have to do it in Italian. Do you speak Italian?
Un poco.
So could you do radio tour in Italian?
Enough to call a team forward, probably, but not the play-by-play. The rules, I think, on the UCI are they need to be in French and the language of the country. So typically French and then English in the U.S. for all the races. Some of the teams, I can do a little good morning in Russian for the Russian teams that have raced in the U.S. over the years and stuff, but definitely you can kind of assume that a team will speak French if they don't speak English.
So I was listening to you today, and I was thinking, if I was in your position, I don't know that I could be quite as neutral sounding as you are. How do you do that? You must have favorites out there.
We have a lot of side talk in the car, for sure, and figuring out who's going to do what in this stage. For example, we saw yesterday that Jens Voigt was not working too hard in that break of 5, and while we know he's a strong rider, we pretty much called that he was going to take the stage if that break could stay away, and sure enough, he did. So we definitely have riders that were favorites, or we see riders come by, and some riders stop and chat as well. Bettini the other day was very worried when Scarzelli had crashed, so he came back to our car a number of times to check on his condition, and thank goodness he was fine. So we often have riders chatting. When I did radio tour in Tour de Pont, the riders used to come back and borrow sunscreen and things from us when we were in a convertible for radio tour 1 year. So there's definitely a lot of camaraderie in the peloton, and we're right in the middle of it all.
How does the Amgen Tour of California compare to some of the other races that you've done? Is this a world-class event? Is it worthy of being a Pro Tour event?
Oh, absolutely. The Amgen Tour of California has got a great start. They really have a huge foot in the door. I think that they've laid the groundwork to create a large-scale event. The cities that we've been to, the routes, they're really wonderful races. We've had just some spectacular scenery, good choices for race routes. The cities are really welcoming. I think all of those pieces together will help the race grow. We're so excited to have Amgen and AEG. I've been wanting for years to get AEG into cycling, so to have them in here I think is really going to do nothing but help the sport grow even more.
Now you have, like I said, a unique perspective. So one last question. You've watched all these guys race all week. You know the question I'm going to ask. Any predictions of who might win?
Any predictions? Actually, we did a blind pool, and I've got Michael Rogers in the pool, so I'm cheering for Michael Rogers to win the pool, but I don't necessarily think that he'll place ahead of anyone. Leipheimer Discovery Channel seems to have a great team. I think the Euros are showing some strengths as well. I'd just love to make it a great race. I'd love to see some of the European teams challenge Leipheimer a little bit more. The time trial tomorrow will definitely tell.
Well, I've become a big fan of your work, so thanks for taking the time to talk.
Merci beaucoup et bonne soirée.
Okay, so far this week we've gotten the perspective of fans,
We've gotten the perspective of some of the technical people and the support people. We've gotten the perspective of a racer or two. And now, of course, we've got the perspective of Radio Tour. So later this evening, I decided it was time that we needed to get the perspective of the teams, and specifically a team manager. And I caught up with team manager Mark Olson from the Priority Health team at the world-famous Madonna Inn there in San Luis Obispo, California. He was very generous of his time, and I think that you'll find his discussion about what it's like to be part of a professional team very interesting. So here's Mark Olson from Priority Health. I'm at the world-famous Madonna Inn, and I'm talking to Mark Olson. He's the team manager of Priority Health. Mark, tell me a little bit about your team.
Well, this is the second year that we are the Priority Health Cycling Team presented by Bissell this year. And the year before that, we were the Advantage Benefits Endeavor Squad. That was the first year that we were a full pro team. So we are definitely one of the smaller teams in the Peloton, for sure the smallest team in the Tour of California. We've got a lot of experience this year. We've added Ben Jock Mains is probably our lead guy. Scott Swazanski brings a lot of strength to the team, a lot of experience. And then all the guys we kept from last year, Teddy King's here, Brian Sheedy, and a few of the other guys we kept from last year, all have more experience than they did the year before. So, last year we were a young team, not a lot of experience, just went out there and fought hard every day. And this year we've, brought on some more experience, and then the guys we kept, Tom Zirbel is another good example. This a lot stronger this year and a lot more experience.
Where do you think the strengths of your individual riders are, and where do you think the strengths of the team are?
This year, over last year, I think we have a lot of weapons this year. We brought on Emil Abraham as our full-time sprinter. He's very, very quick. He's been a successful sprinter over the past few years without a whole lot of help on his past teams. He's got a lot of big boys in front of him this year, so we're looking for him to come through as our speed demon this year. Tom Zirbel, for sure, one of the best time trialists in the country. This is only his second year as a pro, and he's already proven he can TT with the best of them. Ben Jock Mains is also a very good time trialist, and Brian Sheedy is not a pure time trialist, but he's probably one of the best prologue guys in the country. He showed that, I think, here on day one. He had a very specific plan to win that KOM. I can't tell you how much time he spent mapping out exactly how he was going to attack that. I was real proud of him for that. He put the time in, and he won it, world-class field. He won Fitchburg Prologue last year as well. So he's a good specialist in that arena. And then GC guys, Ben Jock Mains, I think, in particular in the domestic field, is one of the best guys out there. And now he's super motivated with the guys we have on this team and the program itself. I think he's going to do some great things this year. And then we've got guys like Teddy King, Robbie King, Garrett Peltonen, and Scott Swazanski. All those guys are really strong engines. They can get in breaks all day long. That can stay out there all day long. So I think we've got a very diverse team. We've got some good specialists here and there, but real strong in all arenas.
How do you feel about your results so far in this year's Amgen Tour California?
Way beyond expectation. We wanted to come here and prove that we deserve to be in the Tour of California, being a very small team. We wanted to be aggressive. We wanted to not just be content, hey, we got in Tour and sit back. The prologue, third place in the prologue with Ben Jock Mains, and then Brian Sheedy wins the KOM. So essentially two podiums day one. I mean, right there, we were already so excited. And again, just from all of our sponsors, they've been calling, emailing, the support is tremendous. And then we turn around the next day and unofficially, really, we're in the yellow jersey. I mean, Ben was in the yellow jersey, and for that to happen, it's just we're going crazy. Even though the decision was made to nullify the last 9K, we've talked to many people about this. We totally support the decision, but you know, underneath it all, you know, hey, we were technically in the yellow jersey at the Tour of California with a world-class field. Then to follow it up day three and put Omer Kim in the break, he initiated the break very early in the race and stayed out there all day long with three guys. And again, you know, the OLN coverage, I'm sorry, the Versus coverage was...
We do that all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he was on, you know, got us TV time for an hour. I mean, so first 3 days were... I mean, we were in the limelight for 3 days, and we could pretty much do nothing the rest of the race, and our sponsors are thrilled. That's not what we plan on doing, of course, but way beyond expectations. Very, very proud of my guys. They trained very hard, very specific for the tour to prepare for it. We've been out here, stayed in Solvang for a month before the race. We've reconned every stage. We've thought about everything. We've selected the team specific for who was on form right now for this race. And the guys have not only delivered on what we had planned to make happen, but way beyond it. And my sponsors and all the supporters of the team, they're going crazy.
So having reconned this and having been in Solvang all that time, what are your thoughts about tomorrow? Any plans from some of your riders?
Well, we're hoping Tom Zirbel has a good day. He's definitely he's done a lot of track on the national team. He's, you know, first time he's gotten on the track this year with the program, and you know, ended up doing a few World Cups and held his own there, which is just tremendous. He's a great athlete, so he's got some specific speed in his legs for time trials. That one's going to be a little longer than he was obviously doing pursuits with. But he spent a lot of time on the course when we were there. You know, if he has a good day, I think he can be up there. But you also have to respect who's here. I mean, you're talking about the best in the world, period. So if he were to get in the top 10 even, that would be a fantastic result. You know, I just ask these guys, go out and do everything they can. Don't leave anything out there. And where the results fall, great, you know. So I'm looking for him and Ben Jacquemains to have solid days tomorrow. Probably the other three guys will rest up a little bit. They're getting tired. They've been working hard all week. So, but we'll see how it goes. And again, you got to keep in mind who they're racing against, and just go out there and go as hard as they can.
What's coming up in your calendar? It's really early in the season so far. What's coming up in the calendar that you're really keying on, that you're looking forward to?
Well, the plan for the year is to focus on the new Pro Tour, the new U.S. Pro Tour. And then, obviously, we'll hit a lot of NRC races as well. But the U.S. Pro Tour races will be the focus. So, you know, we're pretty sure we're going to get in the Tour of Georgia. It's looking very good with our performance here. And, you know, we'll follow it up, Tour of Missouri, U.S. Pro Open. It's going to be a great race in Virginia. It suits our guys real well. The Tour de Leelanau is right in our backyard. We're really looking forward to that. So we'll be definitely focused on that, those races. But right after this, we'll stay out here and do the whole March swing as usual. And looking forward to those races. They're all good races, and stay in the sunshine a little bit longer. And yeah, definitely.
So just to switch gears for 1 second, because a lot of the listeners, they're fans, but they don't really understand what the racer's lifestyle is like. Take a day like today. It was raining outside. It was pouring when we all got up this morning. Take us through the day in the life of one of your racers. What happens from the time they get up until the time they go to bed?
Okay, well, it's not a glamorous lifestyle. These guys, in particular, the domestic guys. You know, there's not a ton of money in the sport right now, or that's slowly changing. And these guys, they definitely do a lot of sacrifice to race their bikes. You know, they get up, let's say for today, they were up probably by 7, eating breakfast as early as they can, get as many calories in them as they can, go back to their room, you know, start getting focused on the race, start getting their race clothing on. You know, while all that's going on, you have the soigneurs getting food ready, and even before they're up, mechanics are up, getting everything prepared, all that's getting done. They will load up the van like today. Typically, today we were close enough that they had to just rode from the hotel down to the start line. But you know, we got up. It's pouring rain. It's 40 degrees out. So we loaded up the van, cranked up the heat, and drove down the start line. And from there, the soigneurs will, you know, help them with warming cream, get their legs ready. Again, a lot of mental focus. Mechanics are pulling the bikes down, getting all that ready. Guys will then, as a team, roll down to the start, go through sign up. You got to sign in every day. At a big race like this, it's very important. You know, it's a good exposure period for the team. They'll go through that. Last minute checks on the bikes and try and keep the nerves down, keep the heart rate down, which is hard to do even for management. Our heart rates are pounding about that time. Then they'll stage up, get ready for the gun to go off, and you know, try to get a good start. And as far as you got 140 guys, you want to line up in the front. You never know if it's going to hit it right out of the gate. And today they did a few parade laps, and then we rolled out. You know, they had to start with tons of clothes on because we knew it was going to rain. And so once you get rolling, you know, today we got rolling, and actually the sun came out for a minute, so it was too hot. So they took all their clothes off, you know, rain gear off, and I don't know, you were there. An hour later, it was pouring so hard you could barely see, so they all had to come back to the car, get the clothes back on, all this while they're racing full gas. So you know, now you're racing today, long one, almost 6 hours in the saddle, through rain and cold and back into the heat again. Let's see, get to the end, try to make it back to the car, try to sit down, you know, swan ears, rub them down again, get recovery mix, get all that nutrition stuff taken care of right away, load them back in the car, bring them back to the hotel. They get rub downs from the swan ears again, more recovery, try to get relaxed, settle in for a little bit, off to dinner, eat as much food as you can again. Right after that, we'll have a team meeting, talk about tomorrow, talk about logistics, talk about strategy. So now you're about 8:30, pretty much right to bed, get as much sleep as you can, get up and do it all over again. So that's pretty much the life and times in a stage race for the riders. There's not a lot of downtime. I mean, it's eat, sleep, and race is pretty much it.
Great. Well, thanks for taking us through the day in the life of a racer, and congratulations on your results so far, and I wish you a lot of luck in the rest of the race.
Thank you very much, David.
Well, there you go. That's the life of a racer. Eat, sleep, and race. And for a race fan like myself, let's see, I've done the eat. I've seen the race. Right. Time for sleep. That's it for tonight for the Fredcast. Feel free to send me an email anytime to thefredcast@gmail.com. If you like, you can use the Fredcast listener hotline. That's area code 206-203-FRED. And be sure to visit the website at www.thefredcast.com. Take a look at a lot of the great pictures that I've been taking over the last couple of days. I'll be back out on the race course again tomorrow covering the Solvang time trial, which should be a critical stage in the event. As I've said time after time, I'll get the show posted just as quickly as I can after the time trial is over. In the meantime, enjoy your Friday, but most of all, enjoy the ride.